The Murthy Law Firm has been clarifying U.S. immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. I am Sheila Murthy, President and CEO of the Murthy Law Firm. We're honored and delighted to invite you to join us for the podcast discussion today with two of my esteemed colleagues at the Murthy Law Firm, Joel Janovich and Kevin Andrews. Joel is pretty much the coordinator and the team leader for the L1 section, and so I thought it would make perfect sense to have Joel discuss certain nuances and complex issues that may be particularly helpful for companies and businesses that are trying to deal with the concept of functional managers. And then after that, Kevin Andrews is going to talk about new office L1s, because that's another very hot topic as far as employers are concerned. And with that, let me hand over the call to both Joel and Kevin to have a lively discussion on both of these issues. Joel, take it away.
Yes, so I was asked, we were asked to talk about topics that are trending in L1s, and immediately my mind went to functional managers. And that trend is less about from the USCIS perspective than really from the client's perspective, because so many people that I talk to, so many of the companies I talk to, that really is where they end up needing, having a need from an L1 perspective, because the USCIS divides managers from an L1A perspective into two categories. You have the kind of traditional manager, which is a people manager, where you're managing teams of employees. And typically, these either have to be large numbers of employees, big enough where you have significant numbers of employees, or they can be smaller teams if you are directly managing professionals. Think about it like a H-1B worker, where you have a degree and a position that requires a person where they have a position that requires a degree in a particular field. Functional managers, the focus is less about the number of people that you're managing or the people that you're supervising, and more about the function that you're managing. So you have to be able to identify the function. You have to be able to show that that function is essential to the company. And so what we found is a lot of times people are coming as managers and they have very large teams abroad. Most of my clients are from India, and much, much smaller teams in the U.S. And so almost automatically, you can't really do a people manager with, you know, just a couple of people in the U.S. or something along those lines. So you can think about, I think, a classic example of a functional manager would be a project manager. That's kind of an easy one to imagine, where the person is coming to manage the project, but the team that's actually performing that project is in India or wherever abroad, the IT team performing it. It doesn't have to be IT, but that's what we see a lot of. You need to be able to show that the person is not actually performing that function. So you always need to have other people around that are doing it. A lot of times, as I mentioned, that team is going to be abroad. You do want to have some people in the U.S. You need someone to be able to relieve that person of non-qualifying duties. So someone, at the very least, is here answering the phone, opening up the mail. Preferably, you want someone here that you can assign, you know, professional duties to. It's the rules about whether or not you need to have any professionals here or the people that you're assigning tasks to have to be professional. The rules are a little bit unclear. And I will say the government has not been entirely consistent with how they adjudicate that. But in any case, these are important things to kind of keep in mind. And ideally, you have some professionals that are either reporting to the functional manager, or at least even if they're not reporting to them, that when it comes to the function being managed, that you can still assign tasks to. So we've seen that a lot, where we'll have people that are not direct reports, but that they can still contact when it comes to the function being managed. So you might go to someone that is not under your supervision, but that you can still say, hey, I need to get these reports run, or I need to get these tasks done. And when it comes to that function, that person will have maybe reports of their own. You might go to a vice president of marketing and say, hey, I need to get a report done on what is selling well in this particular function that I'm doing, or what is the trend in this particular area. And the vice president might have a bunch of reports of their own. Things like that, that we kind of keep in mind when we're looking at functional managers. We've seen these things, again, more and more and more. I think 10 years ago, we were a lot of times would shy away from functional managers, but the rules have become a lot more clear, and we've really honed in on ways to create these very much stronger functional manager cases with a little bit more clarity in the law. All that being said, these cases tend to be a lot more complex. Kevin, you wanna jump in here?
So let me just ask you a question. You're kind of getting into the areas that I feel like I get a lot of questions. We get a lot of questions on these, which is the function. I'm a marketing manager. I'm a business developer, and you know, let's be honest. I'm talking about small companies where there's no such thing as a VP somewhere. I'm talking about a company that's small, you know, in the foreign entity, and it's a small company here. I'm not saying, you know, a new office thing yet, like a short presence, but a small presence. And I need to come here to do the marketing, business development. So when I'm managing the function, there's nobody I'm really reporting to, but I am, you know, meeting with business prospects or gathering marketing stuff or having, you know, contracting out to a marketing agency to run a marketing thing. That's the function I'm managing. I hear what you're saying about having some subordinates to do the non-manager stuff. Like, you need people to help you do this stuff. But what about those kinds of cases? What have you seen first, do you file cases like that? And if so, what do you see with the adjudications on stuff like that?
Well, again, if the person's directly going to be doing it all, I don't think it's going to work. If they have other people involved, it can be contractors, although I have seen on occasion USCIS sometimes pushing back on the idea of contractors being the quote-unquote subordinates. But if you're going to have some people that you can show, and we will create these charts to kind of diagram how it is that the different job duties are going to be performed. We're going to show what the manager is actually going to be doing, and then we're going to show the different people and the different different entities that are going to be assisting them and performing those duties and how they're going to be assisting them. It can work. Now, at the end of the day, if you're trying to really do an H-1B job, let's say, or a non-professional job where the person is actually a salesperson, it may not be a realistic, you know, it may not realistically be able to get done, or it may just be a tough sales case.
And you think sales and business development is too similar? What if they're saying the function, you know, the people involved are, you know, the clients that were, you know, I signed this $20 million deal, and now somebody has to go work on, you know, the specialized knowledge, the specialty occupation part of it. But my functional manager purpose is business. I guess that was my main one, the business development. Do you see success with that?
I think the question is really, what is it the person's actually doing, you know, on a day-to-day basis? If you had 40 hours a week of work, what percentage of that time are you spending, and what is it the person's doing? If you're spending 30 hours a week selling, I think it's going to be tough to argue that selling is a managerial activity, directly managerial activity. That being said, there is case law to show that certain activities, public relations, customer service, customer relations, that these are managerial duties. So it's, you know, again, these are arguments you make. Which officer gets it? What kind of, did they have a fight with their wife that day, or are they having a good day and they're leaving for vacation? Sometimes you get, at the end of the day,
who's president?
You will get, yeah, who's president? These are going to potentially make a difference in your case. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you'll sometimes tell clients, look, your case may not be great. We can give it a try. I think if a client came to me with a truly terrible case, I will tell them flat out, look, you have a very bad case. I don't know that you should file it. But if they come to me with at least a viable argument that, or at least I come up with an argument that I feel is not ridiculous, that I'm going to laugh at myself for having filed it. I will tell them, look, here's what I think. We can give it a try. It may not be great. I like to be crystal clear. I like to be perfectly honest about their chances. I don't like to oversell or make them overconfident. But again, we file a lot of these and we tend to have a very positive outcome in a significant percentage of these cases, or else, and again, the really bad ones, I like to be very upfront with the client and say, look, I think you're going to be throwing your money away.
Thank you, Joel. Maybe it's a great time to have a little bit of discussion on the new office L1s, and I know that a lot of smaller companies, as we were talking to earlier, are keen to try and see how they can start a company here in the U.S., you know, figure out the entity form, LLC, S-Corp, general partnership, et cetera, or, you know, C-Corp, et cetera, and which state because of state tax laws. Again, those are areas we don't necessarily get into, the corporate, the business, the financial, the planning side, because a lot of times that would be determined since each state has its own state law. But we certainly work from the immigration law point of view at the Moody Law Firm. And I believe, Kevin, you've been doing quite a few of the new office L1s, and what are the strategies and issues? What are the practice pointers? If I'm a company and I want to consider it, why should we hire a lawyer? Why should we hire the Moody Law Firm? What does it mean? How does the process work? If you want to share some of those, that might be a great place for us to have a lively discussion. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Sheila. Yeah. So new office petitions, just to make sure we're all on the same page, this is for a U.S. entity that has been in existence for less than a year, and it's something where a manager from a foreign-related entity needs to come in to build that office up, to hire people, to get it up and running so that it's a permanent or location to do the work in the U.S. So in some ways, there's more flexibility with the new office because normally you have to be doing manager job duties, hitting the ground day one on an L1. With the new office, it's okay. Well, I understand. You know, we joke how Sheila tells us sometimes how, you know, first 5 years of the firm, she was doing, I guess they had what's called fax machines and Rolodexes back then, and how she was doing her own stuff for that, and those were non-managerial tasks. So you can work on that in the first year in the new office filing while you hire people to take over those non-managerial tasks to file the L1 extension. So this requires having a physical premises in the United States. Even in our post-COVID environment, a virtual office is not going to be sufficient. So that's a great classic example of something that would be non-managerial that the L1 person might need to come in to do. I need to find an office and read and review and make sure the lease it makes sense and sign the lease. And so those would be non-managerial tasks associated with the filing. And when you file the L1, one thing that, you know, Sheila mentioned, you know, it's about the company organization and where to organize. And, you know, we only practice U.S. immigration law. Our practice is limited to that. But we do work with a business, someone who can help come together with a business plan based on the input from the client, from the employer, about what it is the company is going to do and present that information in a way that USCIS would be receptive and more likely to approve the case. So the business plan, very much just like if you were applying for a business loan, what it is that you intend to do, how is it that you're going to grow your business, I think, you know, in like a 1-3-5 year kind of increment, marketing research and things like that into whatever product or service or combination that you're offering. And so that's going to be an important component of filing the initial L1. And if that initial new office is approved, you have a year to get it up and running. And essentially, when you go to file it, the extension, it's kind of like the show me the money phase, where it's, okay, you said you were going to do these things. What did you end up doing? Who did you said you were going to hire 4 people. How did that work out? And if you're under delivering on what was on the business plan, that's still explainable. If there's some explanation, some market-based explanation about we pivoted to this and now we're growing this, but there's still a managerial job to perform, that's still eligible for approval for an additional 2 years. And I think, I'm not sure we mentioned it, but like an L1A, you're generally eligible for 7 years total time, and it could be a good transition to like an EB1 green card case. I think overall, Joel, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we're not seeing a high denial rate on anything these days, but L1 has always been a source of higher scrutiny, regardless of what the ideology of the time is. The RFEs on L1s are definitely more frequent compared to H1s. And they're also, the responses are going to be more voluminous about, you know, sometimes it is very much going through parsing through the business plan or parsing through those functions for the functional manager, getting some time expert testimony about the managerial nature of the job duties, or additional information from the business plan provider about, you know, the market research or whatever. So the cases can be scrutinized to a higher degree, but we are still seeing a much higher approval rate. So this provides like an attractive option for those who, you know, are getting out of lottery season, but maybe have elements of these kinds of job duties in their foreign job and an opportunity to come to the U.S. under these circumstances.
Thank you, Kevin. For those who are wondering how come we're having a different format, I think from this month we decided from July 2024 to have a more conversational discussion with a couple people, make it shorter, sweeter, to the point. And that way we can really hone in on issues that we believe employers and potentially employees, because the employer, the L1 employer, sometimes can and often is the company, owns a percentage of the company, and so is an employee as well in a lot of L1A cases. And we hope that you really appreciate the shorter, more focused, more nuanced kind of issues that we're touching upon for the podcast. Again, everything that we do is based on the concept of to educate, to empower, and to enlighten, as I call it, the triple E, so that they feel comfortable to process their immigration paperwork here in the United States. And hopefully you're working with the best of the best in the world, the Murthy Law Firm that can guide you, that can help you, that can hold your hand, and that can get you from where you are to where you need to be. So thank you very much for joining us to our discussion, and if not, I hope you found this a very helpful discussion. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your day.
This is a free service. The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.